This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana, signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Chief Murphy Paul is in the house. He heads the Baton Rouge Police Department. He retired from Louisiana State Police as deputy superintendent with more than a quarter century in law enforcement, and he has segued to a tough job in an urban setting with a high crime rate, and it was high before he got the job, and we've had some challenges since. Last year was better than the preceding year, but all across the country there have been issues, and in some cities, murders and other crimes went up. Homicides, for example, in Raleigh, North Carolina, last year went up 48%. You just never know. In Lincoln, Nebraska, up 38%. So, Chief Paul, we actually had a decline, but it was the second highest on record. What's your view of where we are now?
First of all, thank you for having me today. You know, we believe when we see what's going on in the country and working with our team that the strategic plan that we have put in place is working. Let me be clear. We have far too many homicides, right? Crime isn't a police issue. It's a community issue. And the strategic plan that we put in place that focuses on three prongs, right? The enforcement piece. Targeting that small group of individuals that are responsible for crime is important, but also having a balanced approach on the prevention and the intervention side. So we got together last year and we started the East Baton Rouge Gun Violence Collaborative effort to reduce gun violence. We were able to reduce homicides by 21% in the city. We were able to reduce non-fatal shootings incidents by over 14. So we see the success in that by addressing people, places, and things. There's a small group of people that do certain things in certain places. Our micro policing efforts, using data. We have so much data, and we're smarter on how we are using that data to target those individuals. The challenge is we're dealing with the same individuals over and over again. We know that there's a lot of room for improvement in our criminal justice system as a whole. But we do believe that that second approach, which is the community based effort, is being energized in a way. We're seeing victims, family members who've lost victims to violence, energized, working with us, beating the streets with us, bringing solutions to the table. And I believe it is that piece. The foundation that is being set in this city is why we're seeing some of these reductions in homicides.
877-217-5757 is your number with Chief Murphy Paul, who heads the Baton Rouge Police Department. And as we know, confidence in law enforcement has been questioned by virtue of some of these high-profile killings by police officers in other cities. Of civilians who, in many cases, were unarmed. The Washington Post has a poll out today. Overall, 39% of Americans say they are very or somewhat confident police are adequately trained to avoid excessive force. And 60% of those polled nationwide believe police are not effectively trained. Do you think that there's a misconception, or is... at a case where we can do better?
I think we could do a lot better. I think when we see what happened in Memphis, we saw what happened with George Floyd, and we saw what happened in 2016 here in our own community. I think we all have to agree that there's room for improvement. The public's expectation on how we do our job changes, and we as a professional law enforcement agency has to change as well. So here's what we did, Jim. You look at procedural justice policing. In 2018, we looked at what happened in this city, and we realized we had to do better. We realized that we had to train our officers better. We had to make it mandatory. And we instituted procedural justice training in 2019. Every police officer who goes through our academy receives it. And we also have a program to train everybody through that in-service piece. What does that do? Procedural justice talks about the history of policing. We have those uncomfortable conversations about how we've policed disinvested communities, how we've policed in communities of color in the city of Baton Rouge, what those issues are. We talk about biases that we all have that we bring to the table. And we have an honest and open discussion about how those biases cannot make its way into the decision-making mm-hmm. process. So what we teach is fairness. We teach voice, giving individuals a voice in a counter. We teach transparency, being impartial in police encounters, and also respect for people's right and their dignity, mm-hmm. stressing the importance of the sanctity of life. And look, that works. You have to slow down a little bit, make better informed decisions. And here's what we know. Here's how our police officers benefit. Safety increases. There are fewer complaints, greater cooperation from the community, and more voluntary compliance. In 5 years, over 40% decrease in use of force incidents in the city of Baton Rouge. More than a 50% decrease in complaints.
5 years you've been on the job as chief, right?
That is correct, sir.
All right. 877-217-5757. Chief Murphy Paul is with us. And a reminder that signature support for our show is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Now, when we see something in all its horror as what occurred in Memphis with Tyree Nichols being killed by some officers who obviously were overloaded with testosterone or something. What does that make you think? Do you think that this is a systemic problem across the country, or is this just an isolated incident?
Just like many chiefs, when I saw that, it hurt me. I would like to think, and I think I have evidence. You know, we always hear about those incidents that go bad. Our body cameras catch the Baton Rouge police officers doing the right thing every single day. Thousands and thousands and thousands of video evidence. I am proud of the work that the men and women of this Baton Rouge Police Department is demonstrating every day. I am proud and really in my heart believe that the officers we have on this job would not do that, because we have policies in place about duty to intervene. You're required to intervene when you see an officer crossing the line. We did that before George Floyd. When you look at what happened after the George Floyd incident, there were protests all over America. There were riots in some places. We didn't experience that here. We had a few protests that we worked with those organizers, gave them the opportunity to voice themselves. Right now, we are dealing with lawsuits from 2016. We won't have to deal with that because of what happened in George Floyd. And we will not have to deal with that because of what happened in Memphis. There were 17 protests in cities after this new Memphis incident. We didn't have it. And I think that's because the community here recognizes that what they saw on that tape is not reflective of the behavior they see in our police officers. But it says that there are cultural issues that has to be addressed in law enforcement and in some specialized divisions, as in that particular case. But I do think that the collective healing in this community already started.
Well, the Alton Sterling thing was horrid. And then a few weeks later, when that guy Gavin Long came to town and killed some officers for no good reason, there's never a good reason to do anything like that. But he was obviously responding to what had happened, the attention Baton Rouge received. And you went on the record as saying that the person who killed Alton Sterling should never have been on the force, and it caused some grief for you within your own department.
Yeah.
Have you gotten past that?
I think that there's still some who may think that I didn't make the right decision, but it was the right decision. And I think when you look at policing, and let me be clear, I believe we failed that officer.
You failed him?
We failed him. That's correct. Because there were signs, there were indicators, there was opportunities for intervention, there were opportunities for training, there were existing policies that could have been enforced, and we failed to do that. There were rules in place in a hiring process, certain things that would disqualify mm-hmm. you to be hired. And when we compromised those standards, when we relaxed the policy, procedures, and rules that we have in place, that becomes a problem. So, yeah, I do believe we failed. That young officer who probably could have turned out to be a pretty good officer if we, as an agency, had enforced existing policies and rules that were already on the books. And look, I'm going to say this. There are 4.5 million reasons that this city had to pay out. A very conservative city council at the time voted for that, to approve the payment of that.
To his family.
That is correct. That means they probably had a lot more information available to them that the public didn't know about.
Well, one of the council people came on this show and said that drugs were in the officer's system. That's what she said. We'll talk about some more matters with Chief Murphy Paul. Your number is 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And Murphy Paul is in the house. And a listener notes that it is curious that the chief of police often gets blamed for the high crime rate, but rarely does the sheriff, which I think is a good point. I haven't heard the same kind of words said about Sid Gautreaux that I have about Murphy Paul. But Murphy Paul serves largely at the pleasure of the mayor, as previous chiefs have, and the mayor has been steadfastly in his corner. She has two more years left on this term. She plans on running for re-election. She may or may not get re-elected, but when she finishes term number two in 2 years, how do you think it will look as far as homicides in this community?
So if we continue to focus on what we've done last year and see the progress, I think one of the challenges is we want immediate results. We don't always get to hear about the good hard work that's being done because the toxic news, the crime and everything that takes headlines and that travels. At this rate, I believe that we're not going to only match the decrease in homicides from last year. We're going to surpass that 40 to 50% reduction in homicides in 2 years. I think that is some very
50%.
In those. So that's so 21
all right,
last year. So if we do 21, that's 42%. And I think we're going to go further than that with some of the trends that we're seeing right now. That is a very bold statement to make, but I do believe it. Absent distractions, the politicization, the polarizing, how we politicize crime, we can probably do better if we didn't have those challenges with us. But let me say this, the community piece and how we are seeing the community come together more. We don't hear about the homicides that we stopped. This community is stepping up. They're engaging in marches. We are providing data to community organizations to help us with the opioid epidemic.
All right.
To help us with the group violence. And I do believe that with this three-pronged strategy approach that we will continue and reducing crime, because the foundation has been set. And that's why cities all across America are calling us. We're getting speaking opportunities because they see what's working here.
All right. Joe in Goodwood says, as chief, do you sit behind a desk most of the time, or do you get out and work the streets? What do you do?
Oh, I'm actually, I don't work the streets in terms of policing.
Do you go door to door sometimes?
I do. I do walking talks.
In these hot spots?
Absolutely. In fact, we just had a community event. Paul Rice was there, who lost his beautiful daughter, Allie, to violence in this city. Devin Page's parents, grandparents were there. Grandmother was there, Miss Kathy. And at the end of that community speech, I challenged. I say, look, I have data. I'm going to go to the hot spot where we have the most overdoses and the most shooting incident. And we got into cars and our police escorted us to those communities. And we went door to door in one of our hot spots in the city where we have gun violence. We went door to door. And where we're seeing overdoses. And you know what? We got information. Some people may not necessarily give me the information as a chief of police, but they may give it to a community member. And that community member is able to provide us intelligence to help us identify the criminals. We save people with overdose. We were giving out fentanyl strips so that people can test the drugs to help with this overdose, the number of overdoses we're seeing. And we also gave away Narcan to reverse the effects of an overdose, to keep young folks alive, to keep older folks alive who are part of this opioid epidemic that we're seeing in our city.
877-217-5757. And Chief Paul has stated, and I'm taking him at his word, that he'll come back once a month. So we'll have a couple of segments each month until further notice with the chief. And he is now on record as saying that homicides will be cut in half in the next 2 years from where they were a year ago. 877-217-5757. Please be concise. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir. And thank you for your service and also the fact that you guys put your lives on the line every day you go to work.
All right, what's your question, Phil? Phil, what is your question?
Would sensible gun laws and a ban on assault weapons help us all? Thank you.
What about the proliferation of guns and laws in this state, in this country, that allow unfettered use? If you're clear, you can buy anything you want, and sometimes they get in the wrong hands.
Yeah, look, there are too many guns on our streets. I've said that. The EBR Gun Violence Collaborative, we just met at LSU this week. That's all our law enforcement partners. One of the things we talked about was legislation. There's no need for machine guns, for fully automatic weapons to be on the streets of Baton Rouge or any other city. We have what's called switches that are converting these guns into fully automatic weapons. We've made recommendations for legislative changes to kind of mirror the federal laws on the state side, so that just being in possession of those switches is illegal. So there is some legislation that we're pushing for. But here's the reality. When we look at technology today, if I can have a tracking device for my dog, if I can have a tracking device on my phone, if I can have a tracking device, they have these little chips that they put now, yeah. Apple things. I forgot what they call them. But there's so much technology. I believe that if we were serious about guns and giving someone the opportunity when their gun is stolen to find it, no difference than OnStar, right? Someone steals your gun. You call OnStar or whatever this company is and say, hey, my gun was stolen. Can law enforcement go find it? I just initiated this tracking device on it. So now you're taking law enforcement out of it. It's a private entity, and only you as the owner can trigger that tracking process. Technology exists for that. Technology exists for biometrics. If I can look at my phone to turn on, if I can have fingerprints, I can go on and on about opportunities to use technologies to stop gun violence. There has to be a will. But we're making money. Gun sales are up. Every time we recover guns, over 1,800 guns in our evidence, you know what happens? People go buy more guns.
All right.
It's profitable.
Well, as you know, the city is riveted by the death of Madison Brooks. Another story of a young woman who was a victim. She did drink herself to a bad, bad spot, 0.319 alcohol level.
Yes.
Four times the legal limit, but she didn't deserve to die. And the attorneys for the assailants who attacked her in a car is saying that it was a consensual matter, but it would seem that that bars reality based on the information. Am I missing something?
Baton Rouge Police Department isn't working that case. That's a sheriff's office case.
You followed it, though?
Only from a public standpoint. In a public, so I can't comment on an investigation.
But people, as you know,
on another agency
in this community, it is a crime in this community. People are upset, and it has the ingredients, and it is unfair that in North Baton Rouge, if something like this were to occur, it wouldn't get the attention it is getting. But it is getting a lot of attention, and I think you fully understand that. Another listener asked about the shooting at the Dior nightclub. Mm-hmm. Is that place shut down now?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It was. That place, he voluntarily turned over, is my understanding. It is under investigation. You know, it talks about it highlights this culture of violence. You know, we had several police officers that were in that parking lot when that shooting occurred, who responded quickly to render aid and to secure that scene. Mm-hmm. We're actively working that case as well. But the fact that person would still commit that act knowing there were police officers outside.
And another listener, this is David, he makes a point that is actually consistent. Yeah. You know, when something happens in Tigerland, I'm thinking BRPD. But you're saying that's the sheriff's office? How do you differentiate that?
If you go to our website, there's a lot. The website shows you what's in the city limits and what's in the parish. I think sometimes every time someone hears Baton Rouge.
Well, sure.
They think it's Baton Rouge. I know we had a double homicide that recently happened. I got a lot of calls on Seguin. That area of Seguin Lane is not in the city limits.
Like the Waffle House the other day?
Correct. That's not in the city limits.
That's sheriff's office too, huh?
That is unincorporated, yes. Now, we work together. All of our violent crime unit is what we call it. They're co-located together at State Police Compound. So we all work together. But the lead agencies in the unincorporated area is the sheriff's office. And we investigate those incidents that happen within the city limits.
Well, Chief, we'll bring you back next month. Thank you for coming in. Please continue your hard work. Thank you, sir. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. We turn the page, and now we're talking about the world of sports, but this is a sports story that has all kinds of political intrigue, and it is amazing that we've come to this over the Dale Brown Court in September of 2021. The LSU board approved the naming of the court after the most prolific coach in LSU history, four SEC regular season titles, two Final Fours. Of course, a galaxy of famous players played for Dale Brown, including Shaquille O'Neal. And of his 160 players, 114 of them now have received college degrees. And Dale Brown also worked through his foundation to get college degrees through the funding that would allow people like Joyce Walker, the leading scorer in LSU women's basketball history, to come back to school, get her degree, and she's now a member of the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame. And in 26 years since his retirement, Dale Brown has had one honor from the university, and that was the naming of the court. There is no statue of him. There is a statue of Sue Gunner in the Assembly Center, but not one for Dale Brown. Sue Gunner, on the other hand, who is a fine coach and a nice person, in 22 years, no regular season titles, no Final Fours, and yet there is a move by the LSU board to undo what it did a year and a few months ago. And next Friday, I talked to a board member today, and it is going to be on the agenda, according to this board member, as of 1 week from today, and it will be a case in which the board is being prepared to name it the Gunter Brown Court. And the question is why. And two gentlemen who have covered this story quite closely and two of the best in the business, Jeff Marks, Pulitzer Prize winner, who once did a story that got the University of Kentucky in hot water with the NCAA and won the Pulitzer as the youngest winner of that great honor ever when he was working for the Lexington Herald Leader and then moved to Baton Rouge, Jeff, in the year of?
Ooh, now you're testing an old man's memory. Year of 2007, I moved to Baton Rouge.
So this was 10 years after Dale Brown retired, but he got to know Coach Brown, and anyone who follows sports knows the immense legacy in all facets of life for Coach Dale Brown. And Andre Morrow, who grew up in Baton Rouge and went to U High, was there from day one when Dale was hired on March 23rd, 1972.
I sure was.
And I didn't know it until yesterday when he told me that as a student at U High, you were actually allowed to get in the LSU games with your ID.
Yes, we got student IDs as if we were LSU students from first grade on. And so we would go to any event for free, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I was on the front row of the Memphis State game, Dale Brown's first game, the 94-81 victory with my good friends, and cheering on what I could tell was a real difference from what I'd seen the year before with the end of Presmarovich.
And that Memphis State team ended up finishing second in the country. Some great players, Larry Keenan, Larry Finch, two great players who both played a long time in the NBA and ABA. But Dale Brown, of course, is much more than the wins and losses, and LSU in all these years has not honored him. He was a controversial person, as we know. He once called the NCAA Gestapo bastards, but many of the reforms that he called for are now in place, and I have to think that Dale Brown made a difference. Made a difference nationwide, where he is regarded in almost reverent tones by some people, but in his homeland, he was not honored, and he never asked for an honor, and then he gets one, and now Jeff Marks, that honor, let's face it, is being taken away from him. This is being viewed by some as just an inclusion and a way for LSU to show its progressive nature as far as honoring a woman's coach who had the greatest tenure at LSU with the men's coach. But it is much more than that. And you have been looking into this. You've come off the sidelines with a vengeance the last month. What have you found?
Well, what I have found is it's kind of sad, and it's also ugly, and it's also very political, and it's disappointing. What was given to Dale in the naming of that court, I don't know that others would frame it this way, but I kind of refer to it as a lifetime achievement award. Anytime you name a building, a street, an airport, a court, whatever, when you put someone's name on that, you're really honoring their lifetime achievement. And unfortunately, because of what we're seeing now, there's an opportunity in the next week to turn this around. But it looks like it's headed this way, where that lifetime achievement award that has been given to Dale is going to be diluted by, in effect, cutting it in half. And this is nothing against the other person that they're speaking about honoring, Sue Gunter. There are plenty of ways to honor someone with the naming of anything else, whether it's the practice facility, a street, whatever the case may be. It's really just about not diluting this lifetime achievement award that has already been presented.
And what happened in the last 15 months to change the inertia? The board actually was offered at the September 2021 meeting an opportunity to name it the Brown Gunter or Gunter Brown Court and opted not to. The vote was overwhelmingly against it. What's happened in the last 15 months?
Right. So the vote was 12-3 against naming it for both of those coaches. It was 12-3 in favor of naming it for Dale Brown alone. What's happened in the time since then, there's been a lot of behind-the-scenes talk, a lot of behind-the-scenes pressure, and even including a lunch involving President Tate wanting to have lunch with Dale Brown and discuss this with him.
On his birthday, on Dale Brown's 87th
birthday. On Dale's 87th birthday on October 31st of last fall at TJ Ribs. And then shortly after that, just a few weeks after that, a lunch meeting at the governor's office where the governor met with five members of the board to discuss this very thing, because he also wanted to turn it around after the lunch with President Tate and Dale didn't go so well.
And I know some of the members who were there with the governor were Collis Temple and Robert Danff and Valencia Sarpy Jones, who's the chair, and the other two, you know?
I'll let you name those.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know who the other two were, but the governor appointed all of these people. So in some ways they are beholden to the governor, and the governor doesn't ask for much. He did not get involved in the president search, for example. And it is ironic that he is getting involved in this. And Andre Morrow, for those who say, I can't believe John Bel Edwards would get involved in this. Well, Andre has the smoking gun. You got a statement from the governor's office just a few hours ago.
One of his press secretaries, Shauna Sanford, who used to work for LPB, was an anchor at LPB years before I came. She works for the governor's office. And at some point during the week, I thought, well, you know, no one's talked to anybody yet, and no one's been available to talk to yet. None of these people that we're talking about as being integral parts in this change. So I just said, I want to try to get a statement or talk to the governor about it. And so the interesting thing that ensued was sort of a cat and mouse game, I thought, of, you know, why do you want to talk to him? And what role do you think he has in this? And why do you think he's involved? So in the texting that led up to what I eventually got late yesterday afternoon was questioning my sanity. It almost felt like why I was asking these questions. So, and then ultimately what I got was a letter. Andre, please see the statement below. At some point last year, Governor Edwards was contacted by some members of the LSU board and asked his opinion about whether Sue Gunter's name should be added to the basketball court. After reviewing the achievements of Coach Dale Brown and Coach Gunner over the years, the governor agreed that her name certainly warrants inclusion in the name of the court. The governor believes the tremendous accomplishments by both coaches deserve to be acknowledged, and he appreciates the contributions they have made to the men's and women's basketball programs at LSU and to the state as a whole. That's the statement from Governor Edwards.
And I saw the flyer that the governor received, and it was erroneous. It had Sue Gunner coaching a Final Four. She never did.
Never did.
And it had Dale Brown with 30 fewer wins than he actually did in the SEC. And whoever put out that flyer was obviously up to no good.
Yeah.
And it appears when he was contacted by, quote, some members of the LSU Board of Supervisors, I think he was contacted by one member.
Right.
Jeff Marks. And who would that member be?
Well, the talk that kept coming back to me during these last few weeks while I spent a lot of time on this issue. One of the board members and the only one who voted against everything the first time around is a woman named Mary Werner. And Mary, who is also friends with Dee Dee Bro, what has been reported to me in my research is that they, one or both, had conversation with Donna Edwards, who then pass some of this along to Governor Edwards. And a lot of this has been tied into the fact that the first time this was all considered by the board, Mary spoke very passionately and very articulately about why she felt Sue Gunter's name should also be included. And Dee Dee Bro, when I spoke with her recently during this research, shared a lot of her passionate thoughts as well. They both feel very strongly that a woman should be honored along with a man in this case. Dee Dee mentioned recently that it would really make LSU look good. It would be a wonderful thing for them to do in terms of the celebration of Title IX. She mentioned last year being the 50-year anniversary of Title IX and thought, well, what a great thing for LSU to do to honor the 50-year anniversary. I'm all for that, but I don't think it really has anything to do with this issue. I think they're totally separate, but that was definitely wrapped into this as well. All of that made it to the governor's mansion, and I can assure you from the reporting that I've done that it was not a case of the governor reaching out to, of board members reaching out to the governor. It was more a case of the governor responding to some of the things he heard, and he invited five members of the board to a lunch, crawfish etouffee, at the governor's mansion, and this is where it was discussed. I can tell you that from talking to some of the folks who were there, they weren't all too happy about it.
And there is already a statue of Sue Gunner in the Assembly Center, not one for Dale Brown. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757. Usually something involving the naming of a court is a matter of formality. It's happened all over the country. Nowhere in the U.S., to my knowledge, is a court named after two people. And LSU named the field, as Jeff Marks has pointed out, as one of our guests, along with Andre Morrow, at the baseball stadium, Alex Box Stadium, in honor of Skip Bertman. Well, Paul Maneri also won a national title, but it's not the Bertman-Maneri field or the Maneri-Bertman field. It's the Skip Bertman field. Sue Gunner has been honored with a statue in the Assembly Center, despite not winning any SEC titles in 22 years in regular season. And Dale Brown with four SEC titles and 114 graduates, has no honor other than the court being named in his honor, and now that honor is being diminished by virtue of the fact that the board of LSU is prepared a week from today to vote at the Gunter Brown Court. And these people serve at the behest of the governor, and they obviously are supportive of him, and the governor, like everybody else, is right about some things, wrong about others, and we would like for those, I had a listener ask for the numbers, if you support his decision or if you don't, please give the governor's office a call. The Baton Rouge number is 342-7015-225, 342-7015, and the toll-free number, if you're listening outside Baton Rouge, 866-366-1121 for the governor's office, 866-366-1121. And the governor is involved to some extent, and when the governor leans on board members to do something he wants, they take note. After all, they wouldn't be on the board without his appointment. Here's now he appoints them, and soon there will be a new governor, and presumably most of the board members, when their terms expire, will go by the wayside. Jeff Marks and Andre Morrow here, and they have some more information to provide in our last quarter hour here, but 877-217-5757. Glenn in Prairieville, I know, has been waiting for about 5 or 10 minutes. Glenn, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jim. How are you doing?
Fine.
I think this is something that I had gotten back on some of my pages in my social media. People coming back with, well, Sue Gunner did this. I don't think it's a competition here. I think Sue Gunner did a great job, but I think it's Dale, like your guest said, the humanitarian issue. Dale did a lot more for Baton Rouge and Louisiana than just coach basketball. I remember when he was going around the state handing out purple and gold basketball nets. He was an ambassador for LSU and a great asset for the whole state of Louisiana. So,
all right. Glenn, have you ever met the man?
Yes, sir, I have. I was about 11 years old in the hospital. He didn't know me from Adam, and I was a Tiger fan, and I had a bone marrow disease. And Dale Brown came to the hospital and visited me and gave me good wishes and told me when I got out of the hospital to come sit on the bench for one of his games. Well, the next game of all games was whenever LSU beat Kentucky 95-94 in overtime.
Wow.
With all five starters on the bench. So, and a couple of times I've had to call Coach Brown. And again, I'm not an athlete for him or anything. I'm just a regular guy. And he's helped me through some situations. And I love the guy. I really do.
Well, thank you, Glenn. And many people have similar stories about Coach Brown.
Yes.
Gary Smith of Sports Illustrated said there are two sides of Dale Brown. I'll show you and I'll help you. When he's challenged, he fights. And when there's an act of compassion that's needed, he's there. And he always has been. And he's alive. And he's 87. And he's taking this personally, as I think he should. Sue Gunner's been gone for more than a decade. She, like yours truly, the person hosting this show, had essentially no heirs, no parents living, no kids, no husband, no wife. He is a man who is revered by most of the 160 players who are still, most of them are still alive, and all of them revere Coach Brown, and then there are thousands of people like Glenn. And I say thousands, and I don't think I'm exaggerating, Jeff.
And there's been some conversation about the comparing of resumes, and this is not a thing of comparing resumes. It's not about compare and compete. It's a thing about, as lawyers would say, asked and answered. We have already had these questions asked. The board already answered with their vote the first time around. So to come back and revisit this and to do it with such an air of secrecy, my question would be about that. Why? If you're doing something you're so proud of and you want to see it happen and celebrate it, why are you doing it behind closed doors and in secret and not responding to interview requests and this type of thing? I have tried in recent weeks to speak to the governor about this. I've tried to speak with President Tate, with Scott Woodward, the athletic director, mm-hmm. with Valencia Sarpy Jones, the chair of the board, with Mary Warner, who we talked about earlier. And none of those people want to talk about this. If you're doing something you're so proud of and want to see happen publicly, then why not be out there celebrating it and talking about it publicly? Very confusing.
Why not shine the brightest light on it? If it's so good and so good for the university and for Louisiana, why not have that? Why not have it right out in the broad daylight instead of the dark shadows?
And according to board members, this will be on the agenda next week, and yet it's not on the agenda now. This has the the look of something being done cloak and dagger. And mm-hmm. I remember my friend, the former president of LSU, he was Chancellor Mike Martin. He said he's worked all over the country, and LSU is the most political place on the planet, and this is evidence of that. And I know one person who has talked with you, Jeff, and I commend anybody who'll come forward and actually say something is Coach Bro, Dee Dee Bro, who's still involved working at LSU, and she has acknowledged she's right in the middle of this.
Yes, and she did, in our conversation, wanted to downplay her role, but clearly she has been involved at different times in different ways, one of which happened fairly early on. And when I say fairly early on, It was after the votes took place. Once the vote had been passed to name the court Dale Brown Court, but before the ceremony was actually held on January 4 of 2022, where the court was actually named, and before the LSU-Kentucky game. So it was during that time period in between, so pretty early on, and she had been contacting Dale by phone, by email. He finally was over at LSU one day, and they got together and had a conversation about this, and it was that early on that Dee Dee was encouraging Dale to be the one to go out front and make a change on this and add Sue Gunter's name to it as well. This was so soon after he had just been given this honor. And I know that was really confusing to Dale and troubling to Dale. Mm-hmm. And I know part of his response also was, this isn't even my position to do that.
He didn't go it ask would for be, this. He didn't would ask be, for this to happen.
Dale felt it would be disrespectful on his part to inject himself into the process.
And what an odd, in my opinion, what an odd request from Dee Dee Bro, who's the ambassador for LSU now. I just think that's one of the strangest things that I've ever heard, really. To lobby for that, let me show you this real quick, too. The end of my text with, after I received the statement from the governor, my response, I'll go ahead and tell you right now, my response was, okay, thanks. Travesty. Travesty?
Who wrote this?
This is I'm telling you my side, and then I Shauna Sanford, is questioning travesty. And I said, yes, a damn shame. Politics, LSU. And then she says, I certainly hope it's clear that none of this was initiated by the governor. He was simply asked for his opinion. Well, all the facts show that that's not exactly accurate, I think. And the first thing I did with this was I called Robin Brown Prudham.
The daughter of Coach Brown.
Of Coach Brown, who I'm good friends with. And I'm very good friends with Coach Brown, who has reached out to me and done more just as a friend over the years when I haven't lived here. Just being interested in me as a person, like he is to the young man in the hospital when he was a young boy, like he is to countless others. This is one of the great men anyone would ever have the opportunity to know. And so I contacted Robin because I said, I want for Coach to know this immediately. So she passed it on to him, this statement.
All right, Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Jeff Marks and Andre Morrow. Hi, Dan.
Hi. The whole issue itself seems so frivolous when the university has a leaking library and a plethora of academic challenges.
All right, and remember, the governor also got involved in taking Troy Middleton's name off the library, which was probably a good decision, but yet David Boyd still overlooks the parade grounds, and he fought against the United States. He was a traitor who fought for the Confederacy. General Middleton fought for the U.S. in two wars. The governor is picking some interesting fights, but another listener says it's not Coach Brown's fault, it's Bill Tate's fault, the president of the university. He was appointed to make decisions like this, and he has totally reversed his position on this.
Yes.
Why would he totally reverse his position, Jeff Marks?
Well, first, to come back, if I may, and say, address something Dan mentioned, which I totally agree with. It is frivolous. I can't even believe, as a resident of this state, as someone who really cares about this place and about the university and has really enjoyed it here, it is flat out embarrassing to me. As I worked on this the last few weeks, I even got to the point a few nights ago, I said to my wife, I'm actually embarrassed. I have spent this much time on this issue these last few weeks as a grown man but it's such a nonsense issue. Why? Who cares? It's the naming of a court. The fact that a governor of a state and the president of a university would spend this much time and care about this the way they have is absurd to me.
In light of everything happening, and also in light of the young woman who was raped and then killed just a little over a week ago.
It is an interesting battle to fight, and we will talk about it again next week. Signature support for our show is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Thanks, Andre. Thanks, Jeff. And the governor's number again, 225-342-7015.